back on Downtown here on Monday afternoon. Rich Kimball with you. All right, we've been waiting for this conversation for a while because so much talk, so much buzz about baseball's offseason. What will the Red Sox do? Well, Sean McAdam certainly knows more than I do, and so he joins us this afternoon. Sean, good to have you with us.
Nice to be with you, Rich.
Juan Soto, did you have you had dinner with him? Did you see him over Thanksgiving?
I sent the invitation, and we had the place setting and everything, and dinner time came and went, and no Juan Soto, so I'm not sure what that means.
Was it the side dishes, or was it contract
the
terms?
Food was it couldn't have been the food, which I should point out I had nothing to do with. If I had made it clear that I was cooking and preparing, then his absence would have been completely understood. But it was actually held as it is every year for us in your great state, and with some relatives, but no one.
That's disappointing. But that doesn't mean he won't end up there eventually. So what's the status? Are there 4 or 5 teams? Is it down to 2? Are the Red Sox really still in the hunt?
Yeah, from all we can gather, it is really, I think, 4 teams. The 2 New York teams, the Red Sox and the Blue Jays, with the Dodgers and their seemingly endless deep pockets lurking somewhere off to the side, maybe awaiting an 11th hour bid or finding out if there's an opening for them. But they don't seem as motivated with Soto as they have been on some others. They are principally focused on pitching, as they've already landed Blake Snell and maybe in the market for some additional starting pitching after all the injuries they put up with last year. So I think it really is the 4 teams in the East here, and I've said all along I thought he was going to end up with the Mets. I have a hard time thinking that if Steve Cohen really wants something, that he's going to be outbid for it. And, it could be, there could be a point where the Yankees get up from the table and say, this is too much even for us. I don't know that there'll be one of those points for the Mets. Are the Red Sox still in it? Yes. But beyond that, we don't know a whole lot. Other than, as I've been told, and others too, that it's more likely than not that this gets decided probably by the weekend and maybe even somewhere in the next few days. I think there's the feeling that this is coming to a head and there'll be some resolution really before the winter meetings kick off in earnest on Monday morning.
Well, I'm glad, obviously, that the Red Sox are interested, but a left-handed hitting power hitter, not really high on their list of priorities. Is this more about establishing that they are players for the big names once again?
No, I think it's legitimate interest on their part, and I think that Soto is such a singular talent that it almost doesn't matter that he hits left-handed. In his career, his OPS against lefties is about .860, and this past year, his splits in terms of OPS were almost indistinguishable. He was like .995 against righties and .990 against lefties, or something very close to that. So the fact that he's left-handed, people look at the Red Sox lineup and say, well, they already have Devers and Casas and Duran, and then they have Anthony and Meyer on the way, and these guys are all left-handed, and Yoshida and Abreu and on and on. But he's such a great offensive performer that he can lift any lineup. He can make everybody around him better. And he really is a generational talent. This guy just turned 26 at the end of October. So it's not a stretch to say he could still have 8 years of his prime remaining. The trick is you have to pay for maybe 12 or 13, but if you're getting 8 or 9 years of peak performance from a guy whose numbers rival that of Ted Williams, then you worry about that down the road. So I think they see him as a guy that is probably the best hitter, pure hitter all around in the game. And but it would also make a statement that, you know, the Red Sox are back in business, that they are again, at least occasionally, ready to compete for the high-end talent when it becomes available, which is obviously something they haven't done much of over the last 5 or 6 years.
Now, they've got some room under the luxury tax and all of that, but would they consider, would they be able to do, if they were to get him, some kind of a deal similar to what the Dodgers did with Ohtani, with a whole lot of deferred money?
Well, if we're using past history to guide us there, Scott Boras clients traditionally do not take deferred payments. I think Ohtani probably spoiled everybody into thinking that that could be done in every premier free agent case. But the difference is Ohtani has enormous off-the-field income streams with his various endorsements and away from the field platform that no other baseball player can match. Mm-hmm. So the fact that he was deferring, 98% of his salary is not something that I look to become a trend. Let's put it that way. And I think it's more likely that teams are being told that they want present day value here. Now, there could be some opt-outs that get a little tricky in there, but I don't think a heavily deferred salary is going to be a winning strategy here.
We're talking with Sean McAdam here on Downtown. Well, what about that first priority for the Red Sox, starting pitching? Blake Snell off the table, still some free agent talent out there, and they've been linked with a number of teams, especially the White Sox, in the efforts to maybe get somebody like a Garrett Crochet.
Yeah, and that still is a priority. I think people are worried that the Red Sox are so focused on Soto that if they were to win the bidding there, that would preclude them from upgrading other areas on the team, which clearly need upgrading, and that includes both the rotation and the bullpen. But it's my understanding that they knew going in that even getting Soto wouldn't address all their needs, and that they would still be willing to get a front of the rotation starter and to build out the back of their bullpen further. So you're right, there are a couple of established free agents in Burns and Fried, one righty, one lefty. There is the looming prospect of Roki Sasaki, the latest Japanese phenom, who would be almost a bargain basement acquisition due to the fact that because of his age, he would be classified as an international amateur, and thus there would be limit. You would have to pay from your international bonus pool money to bid on him, and that tops out for teams at about $7 million. It would be somewhere between $5 and $7 million in a signing bonus, and then he would be treated as though he were a prospect coming to the big leagues for the first time, where you would pay him the major league minimum the first year, a little bit more the second year, and then by the third year he's eligible for arbitration. So economically speaking, he'd be the most affordable, obviously, but he doesn't have the track record that guys like Burns and Fried have here, or even Crochet, who's pitched a few years with the White Sox.
Now, as they look to perhaps make some trades in addition to free agent signings, what does that mean for, I guess what we would call the big four of those minor league prospects? Is it likely that we see one of them go somewhere else if they can get a pitcher in the deal?
I think that I would find it hard to believe that they would deal either Anthony or Campbell at this point. They seem to be such high-end prospects that I don't think they would include them in a deal. I suppose it's possible that Meyer could be somebody that'd be willing to go. They do have some other top shortstops in their system. They've got another 3 years of commitment to Trevor Story at short. They've got Christian Campbell who could end up there. There are so many ways they could go shortstop-wise that I think Meyer is the most tradable of the big four. Teal might also be in that category, but finding young, elite young catching is so hard to do. I don't know if they'd be willing to give up on him. But I would say Anthony and maybe Campbell are close to untouchable of the big four.
Is there anything to the notion that teams like the White Sox that need so much to get back into being a contending team would probably prefer someone even less close to the major league level, not one of those frontline prospects, but maybe somebody further down the depth chart?
No, I think that, you know, when if you're the White Sox, you want to get the best package and the most talent you can for a trading chip like Garrett Crochet. And if that means you're getting a guy who can step in and contribute next March at the beginning of the season, that's fine. If you deem any of those big four needing a half season of additional seasoning and development at AAA, that's fine, too. And I wouldn't rule out, as I wrote a few weeks ago, the prospect of somebody like Willier Abreu, who's already got a little bit more than a year of service time. You know, if he headlines a deal or is one of the two big pieces you're getting back, you still control him for another five full seasons. If you like him enough, you know, what, as it was explained to me, you've burned a year, but you know more about Abreu and his ability to play at the big league level than you do of anybody like, say, Marcelo Meyer, who, talented and highly regarded as he may be, hasn't even played a game at AAA yet. So there's more projection that has to be done there. So, again, I think the White Sox or any team that you're dealing with want the most amount of talent coming back. In a perfect world, everybody's odometer would be at zero when it comes to major league service time to pull off that trade. But to me, that's not an absolute necessity.
And what about the bullpen, Sean? We've heard names like Tanner Scott. They're eyeing guys that can come in and get the job done in the seventh and eighth innings. And maybe even the ninth is still open, not really knowing for sure the status of Hendricks.
Yeah, I think there's a, you know, there's a bit of the unknown with Hendricks, obviously, when you're talking about somebody in his early to mid 30s who's coming off Tommy John. You know, it's so commonplace in the game now that people tend to think it's an automatic, that everybody comes back from Tommy John good as new, on time, without any delays or any hurdles. And already when Hendricks was aiming to get back on the mound and get into games last September, he fell short of that goal. Now, that doesn't mean that the surgery was not a success or that he's not going to be able to come back and pitch well at the big league level, but it's a reminder that there's a little bit of a gamble when you are entrusting such a significant role to somebody who really hasn't pitched much at the big league level over the last 2 years. So, they definitely need some other back-end options. Scott could be one. They could go out and make a trade for some guys. You've got a guy like Jordan Romano, who was non-tendered by the Blue Jays last month as a potential closer with experience. So I think they want to create more depth and give themselves more options at the back end to go with Hendricks and maybe somebody like Slayton.
Sean McAdam, MassLive.com. Sean, we appreciate it as always. Thanks so much for being with us today, and we'll make every effort to catch up with you again before they shut it all down end of the month.
I certainly hope so, Rich. Thanks.
Thanks, Sean. Sean McAdam with us here on Downtown.